Okay, we're going to read one text from Bhagavad Gita, and then I'm going to talk on the science of human relations, the mystery of human relations. I heard that you're all experts on the topic of human relations. Maybe I can't teach you anything, but still, I will speak about something. Welcome to our friends. Thank you for coming. Alright, so we will read one text from this ancient book. Let me take the dust from it. 5,000 year old. Actually, this is the original love book. I'll explain to you just now. It's true. Bhagavad Gita. It's a science book, leadership book, and love book. Three in one. So I'm going to share with you some realizations. We got text 27. Okay. So I'm going to read it once. You repeat after me. And then one gentleman and one lady. Just for the sake of time. Okay? So that we don't... Because we did a little longer kirtan. Is that okay? Yes? So I'll do once, one gentleman, one lady, and then we carry on. Okay. Okay, kindly repeat responsibly. So to our new guest, this is in a Sanskrit language, very ancient language. Hardly anyone uses it these days. I think Stephen King used in some of his books mentioning about it. They use it in these old books as well, because that was the original language these books were spoken about. You know Stephen King? Yeah. Okay. Ragi karma phala prepsur. Lubdo harsha shokanvita karta. Raja Shaparikirtati, Shaparikirtita. One more time. Raja Shaparikirtita. Okay, Prabhu, any brave man out there? Karma pala prepsu. Lubdo himsatma ko shuchi. One lady now. Sorry. Ragi karma pala pepshur. Lubdo himsatma ko shuchi. Asha shoka mita. Okay. Word by word, we do? Okay. So kindly repeat. And better remember all the words in Sanskrit. I'm going to test you after that. Ragi,
ragi,
very much
attached. Very much attached.
Karma phala,
karma phala,
the fruit of the work.
Fruit of the work.
Prepsu,
prepsu,
desiring.
Desiring.
Lubdha,
lubdha,
greedy.
Greedy.
Himsa atmaka.
Himsa.
Always envious.
Always envious.
Ashuchi.
Ashuchi.
Unclean.
Unclean.
Harsha shoka.
Amvita.
Subject to joy and sorrow.
Karta.
Such a worker.
Rajasaha.
In the mode of passion. Parikirtita. Is declared. Your English is good? No need of translation for you? Wonderful, good. All right. Now we're going to read the English and the purport by Srila Prabhupada. The worker who is attached to work and the fruits of work, desiring to enjoy those fruits, and who is greedy, always envious, impure, and moved by joy and sorrow, is said to be in the mode of passion. Can we repeat, just so that we can meditate a little more? The worker who is attached to work and the fruits of work, desiring to enjoy those fruits, and who is greedy, always envious, impure, and moved by joy and sorrow, is said to be in the mode of passion. Okay. Prabhupada's explanation, purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. A person is too much attached to a certain kind of work or to the result because he has too much attachment for materialism or... How do you read this?
Heart.
Heart and home. Heart and home. But what does it mean, heart? Materialism or
like fireplace.
Huh?
Fireplace.
Like fireplace.
It's a word.
It's like a homely atmosphere.
No, it's when you build a fire and put stones.
Yeah, but it means a homey atmosphere.
Yeah.
Because when you have a fireplace, it's homey and nice.
Yeah, this is like heart of the heart.
Okay. So it's a homey place. Okay. It's a heart and home. Wife and children. Such a person has no desire for higher elevation in life. He's simply concerned with making this world as materially comfortable as possible. He's generally very greedy and he thinks that anything attained by him is permanent and never to be lost. Such a person is envious of others and prepared to do anything wrong for sense gratification. Therefore, such a person is unclean. He does not care whether his earning is pure or impure. He is very happy if his work is successful and very much distressed when his work is not successful. Such is the worker in the mode of passion. Pretty heavy, eh? Looks like I'm in that category myself. How can I teach you something? Okay. Om Agenati Mirandasya Agenanjana Shalakaya Chakshuran-militam ena tasmai Shri-Guruve namaha. Shri-Chaitanya-manabhishtam sthapitam ena bhutale Swayam rupa kadam mahyam dadati svapadantikam. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gupika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute. Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye. Manchakalpa Taruvescha Vipasindu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, so this is at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. 18th chapter, it's kind of the first quarter of the 18th chapter, the perfection of renunciation. So Krishna is teaching Arjuna how to be renounced. And to do so, he has to explain to him the dynamics in this world, attachment to the fruits of our work, the sorrow and the joy, the duality of this world. So he's teaching him these things in a practical way to encourage him to actually become renounced. So this word renunciation may sound very dangerous and very strange, even something that is unattractive to us. But actually, renunciation really means sannyas. Sannyas means to put everything into perspective. This is the meaning of sannyas. Sannyas. San means to join, sankirtan. And yas is connected to a place. So everything must be put to be joined to its place, to its proper position. That is called sannyas. One who knows how to put everything in its proper position is a sannyas. What does this mean? That everyone can be a sannyas? It doesn't have to be some kind of a initiation or order to be actually a sannyasi. Arjuna was a warrior, but Krishna was telling me you're a sannyasi. Remember, 6th chapter, the first verse. And by surrendering to Krishna, Arjuna became sannyas, sannyas yoga. You never thought about it, Ananta? So, why is it so important to be renounced? Because to be renounced actually means, sannyas in English means to be renounced. But to be renounced really means to know how to put everything in its proper place. So how do we understand this? Well, it's very, very simple. Everything belongs to God. And if you use everything for God's pleasure, that is sannyas. Finish. That's all. So, when you take God out of the picture, if you try to renounce, it's like monkey vairagya, artificial vairagya, because you don't really connect everything to God. And after some time, you'll feel bored in your artificial renunciation. You'll become dry, you'll become frustrated. Because you're simply negating, you're not really engaging in relationship. So I'm going to teach you the science of relationship today. And to be a sannyas means to know how to relate first to the root cause of everything, the Supreme Person, Krishna, and then to know how to relate to each and every person in the context of Krishna. Okay? So, we can look at Prabhupada, when Prabhupada went to the West, 1965, Bhaktivinoda Swami Ki Jai. So, he knew how to relate to each and every person. In Lilamrita, if you read it, in the early days, people would go to his door, Prabhupada will invite them, they will feel happy in his association. So people feel happy because Prabhupada was very personal with them. He wasn't some detached sannyasi who was trying to negate the world and the people. He related to both men and women. He wasn't just relating to men. And he encouraged the woman to engage in Krishna service, he encouraged the men to engage in Krishna service. So Prabhupada knew exactly how to deal with everyone because he knew he was connected with Krishna, with the root cause. He was serving Krishna and then he knew how to deal with every person. And then based on that mystical internal connection with Krishna, all his external outreach became successful. so many people came and became so appreciative of Prabhupada that they dedicated their whole life to his mission. Wow. That's amazing. Huh? There's one person, he meets so many people, and gradually they just one by one, sometimes in group, dedicate their whole life to his mission. Even after he's left the world, they still carry on his mission. That is based on relationship, sustainable relationship, simply because he knew how to love people. And he knew how to love people because he loved the source of people, who is Krishna. So this is really the temples that Prabhupada opened are all about enabling us, empowering us how to relearn the art of loving others. Please be careful. If you don't listen, if you don't understand this, you will not understand anything. This place here is offered to us to learn how to love people. How to love the soul, how to take care of our soul, and how to take care of other people on 5 levels. Physical, to take care of people's comfortable existence, if it is our responsibility. To take care of people's emotional satisfaction, to take care of people's social balance or harmony, to be existing socially in a healthy position. Intellectual care, to stimulate people to think about important subjects in life related to spiritual advancement. And ultimately, spiritual care, these 5 levels of care. So, we cannot care about others, we cannot care about even the properties that we have been offered if we don't understand our relationship with the Source, with the Supreme Person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So first and foremost, we require to understand what is the Source. When we understand the Source, we can revive our relationship, the internal relationship, and then we can actually face the world in a different way. Here, Krishna is explaining how what is the position of a person in a mode of passion. He's attached to his work, he's attached to the fruits of work, he wants to enjoy these fruits, he's greedy, he's always envious, he is impure, is in a dualistic condition, sometimes happy, sometimes sad. So this is pretty much all of us in this world, unless someone is a Paramahamsa from all of you. I don't know you, but generally this is somewhat a description of an ordinary human being. Of course, Vaishnavas are not ordinary. But even when we are in the beginning stages of bhakti, neophytes, this is pretty much mixed with our service to Krishna. Sometimes some devotee is doing better sankirtan than us, then we get like envious. I should have been the first one on the marathon. It's me who I deserve that result, that position. We want to enjoy the fruits, whatever comes with our work in the world, some fruits come, some kind of success. We want to enjoy it. We're greedy for more. Sometimes we're happy, sometimes we're sad. You see how this person treated me? He was so horrible to me. We become really sad. You know? And sometimes someone treats us well. Oh, I'm so happy. Thank you for treating me nicely. I'm really happy. Thank you so much. You're the only person that treats me nice. So we just after satisfaction, personal ego. And we're searching for happiness. at that time. This is called Maya, illusion. So, we are in the Vedas, in these ancient books, it's explained that we are always looking for happiness. Anandamayi Vyasat. Okay? This is the Sanskrit word. Anandamayi Vyasat. We are always looking for happiness. But when we are contaminated, when we are absorbed in material activities, or when we are in contact with material energy, we feel that when we gain something material, we'll become happy. That is called illusion. So, we also enter into relationships with the same mood. We go to someone and we think, what can I get out of this person? Usually, that is kind of how people operate. And that's why the relationships in the world, in our modern society, very unsustainable. Because we always go with that mood. What can I get out of this other person? I'm feeling I'm in need of something. And if I meet this person, my life will become better. I'll be more fulfilled. I'll be happier. So I need this person. And when that person doesn't satisfy us, we just kick them out and we look for another person. This is the story of our life, right? Yes or not? Yeah. This is the truth. So, this is the problem is because of confusion. We think that everything is meant for our pleasure. This is called self-centeredness. So I'll give you a little, I'll take a little detour about happiness and then I'll get back into the topic of relationship. And particularly sannyas, putting everything into its place. And transcending the modes, passion, goodness, ignorance. Well, goodness is a favorable mode to some extent, so we can transcend. But we want to understand how to function on the platform of Sudasap. Is that okay? Is that okay? Do you want to hear about pure goodness, how to function on? Yes. Otherwise, I'll change the topic. Okay, Suddha Sattva is nothing mystical. It's very simple. But listen, step by step, I'll guide you there. Okay, now, happiness. We are all searching for permanent happiness. Why? Why are we searching for permanent happiness? Any answers from the audience? Why? Why are you looking for permanent happiness? Why don't you just become satisfied with temporary happiness? What do you think?
Because the soul is ananda, it's always blissful.
The soul is always blissful, and this means that the soul is looking for bliss. Okay, this is one answer. Why are we looking for permanent happiness? I'm asking.
Because it doesn't end.
Hmm?
There's no end.
Okay, so what's the benefit of that? Okay, but if you are temporary and the happiness doesn't end, how does it fit? How those two things fit together?
Because you're eternal in life.
Just see. So, what is your name, Mataji?
Bhakti and Sabina.
Bhakti and Sabina said we're eternal, and because we're eternal, we look for permanent happiness. Look at the logic. You agree with her? Very good. Correct. So, we are, the first lesson of Bhagavad Gita is we are not this body. Okay? We are eternal. We don't die. There is no birth, no end. We just transmigrate. When the body dies, the soul moves into another one. Then it dies, then into another one. How does it sound to you? Yeah. So, the soul inside the body is anti-material, non-chemical. It's not made of molecules and atoms. Please try to understand this. For example, this glass, it doesn't have consciousness. I boldly declare it. Why? What is the symptom of consciousness? Any takes? What do you think is symptom of consciousness? Huh? Awareness? Good. Very good. Huh? Life. What is life? Thinking, feeling, willing. Yeah, so the cup doesn't think, is not feeling, is not willing, therefore isn't conscious. It's good logic. Does it have a free will? If I leave it here, will it go somewhere? Take a walk in Ljubljana center. You see it on the street, just doing Harinam. You know. No. So it doesn't have a free will. Free will is one of the symptoms of consciousness. Emotion, intuition, growth, biological growth, reproduction, these are all symptoms of consciousness. Okay? So, this glass doesn't have consciousness because it doesn't have these qualities. And my body is matter and this is matter. Why this is alive and why this is not alive? Why this is alive and why this table is not alive?
It doesn't have a soul.
Yes. And the soul is non-chemical energy. You cannot create soul through mixing oxygen, hydrogen, carbon, nitrogen. Not possible. So this shows we are not the body. That means energy is eternal. Energy is not created or destroyed. You know the laws of physics. Energy is not created, not destroyed. It's always there. So in material energy, it may be destroyed, may be changing the shape. This glass may become something else. You may destroy it, squash it, throw it, and after 100 years, it may turn into something else. The same energy. It's still there. So the spiritual energy, the soul, is also eternal. It doesn't have beginning and end. But it doesn't mix with anything else. It's always an individual. That is the difference between spirit and matter. Matter can mix. This table and this glass can mix into one after 100 years. They can lose their shapes and become one item. But the soul, the spiritual particle, is eternal. Your soul and my soul will never mix. We're eternal. We're individuals. Okay. So this is very important foundation for understanding relationships. If we don't understand this, we cannot understand relationship and happiness. So, just a little one other thing comes to my mind. You know Socrates and Plato? Yes? Yes. So these are two Greek philosophers, very great philosophers. They lived before Christ. And they spoke the same philosophy, spiritual philosophy, even before him. That we are not the body, we are the soul. So, Socrates, he never wrote any books. Okay? But Plato was his disciple and he wrote 36 books. And the main character in these books was Socrates. He practically wrote what he heard from Socrates and he recorded it down to make it available to the people. So Socrates, his philosophy was very simple. The first thing for achieving happiness is knowledge of the self. If you don't know who you are, you cannot achieve happiness. So that's why I'm teaching this difference between body and soul. Okay? This is number one. When you know who you are, and when you know the self and the super self, this is knowledge. Then the second, what happens to you is you engage in relationship, in virtuous activities. Virtuous activities means activities that are beneficial to others. We can also say activities that are pleasing to the super soul. Okay? And from this you get happiness. So there is three things: knowledge, virtue, happiness. Okay? That's how we get happiness. Through spiritual knowledge, through good or super good activities. Good activities means acting in the mode of goodness, and super good activities means acting for the pleasure of the super soul, the supreme person. And that is the key to happiness. Okay? If you don't know who you are, if you don't know what is the source, you cannot act virtuously. And if you don't act virtuously, you cannot get happiness. Especially permanent happiness. Because the soul is permanent, and if you know how to act on the platform of the soul, you will always be permanently happy. Okay? So one time I was in South Africa, and one student told me at the university, there is no such thing as permanent happiness. It's only temporary happiness. I said to him, are you sure? He said, yes, I'm sure. So I told him, okay, you answer a question. So I told him like that, is there anything in your life that makes you happy? He said, yeah, sure. My girlfriend makes me happy. I said, do you want to lose your girlfriend? He said, no, I don't want to lose her. So I told him, this is the symptom that you want permanent happiness. He's not realizing it, but the fact is there. He doesn't want to lose his girlfriend. That means he is searching for permanent happiness, because she's giving him happiness. He doesn't want to lose the lady because she's giving him some happiness. So, in philosophy, there is some notion. If you are in need of something, if you are needing something, that thing exists. Listen very carefully. If you need something, that means this thing exists. Okay. Do we need air to breathe? Yes. So, air exists. Do we need water? Yes. We need it, naturally. So, water exists. Right? Do we need permanent happiness? Yes. So what does this mean? It exists. But where it is, I cannot find it. I never saw anybody to have permanent happiness. I want it. Can you give it to me? I will give you 1 million euros. Yes. I can give you permanent happiness. Because Prabhupada gave us. So, let's imagine we're going on a tour in the desert, all of us. Paris-Dakar, you know, Algeria, you know, the 2,000 miles or kilometers of sand, only sand, nothing else except sand. What is the most expensive commodity there? Are you sure? Maybe it's gold. Gold? No? Petrol. Petrol cheap maybe. Petrol is cheaper than water there. It's water. Why it is water the most expensive thing? Because it's not available easily. Okay? Huh?
It's rare.
It's rare, yeah. So, permanent happiness. It sounds weird, you know, we don't see it. But we know it's there. That's why we are looking for it all the time. It's a very precious commodity. So now, listen carefully how you're going to find it. Are you writing it down? One time one devotee was joking. He said, hey, you came to my class, I don't see anyone writing anywhere. Taking notes. But he said, but if my class was titled, How to Make $1 Million, you would have been like really, really ready to write everything I'm going to say. Ananta, tomorrow you put How to Make $1 Million class by Vraj Krishnadas. Then you'll see. I'm just joking. I know you're recording, so you don't need to write. You are technologically advanced. Okay. So, let me tell you the key. If you are in the desert, You just have to get out of the desert to find unlimited water. Okay? You go to the river Nile, massive amount of water. It's the second biggest river in the world, passing through 6 countries. Amazon, I think, is the first one. Nile is bigger than Ganges, much bigger. So, you just get out of the desert and you'll find massive amount of water. Now, in our situation, we have to get out of the desert of selfishness. You're not going to do that? We have to get out of the desert of selfishness. And then we can find this unlimited happiness. So what is selfishness? These days, so much propaganda. Just satisfy yourself. Be yourself. Have fun. You know, everything is for yourself. But I don't see any happy person, despite people being focused on what they call the self. Yeah? I don't see any happy. When I go on the streets, I see here and there someone smiling. Mostly people are like, something missing there, you know. So, if that theory was correct, then you would have seen everyone in bliss in the streets. You know, dancing and yeah, you know. Sometimes you see it when the soccer team wins or something like that. But not all the time. You know. So why can't we have this permanent happiness all the time? It's because we're in the desert of selfishness. And in the desert of selfishness, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Sometimes you find an oasis. Yeah. Sometimes you move and there is no oasis for 300-400 kilometers. And then you're like, I'm just going to die in this desert, you know. So, knowledge of the self is foundation how to find happiness. This is what Socrates said. If you know thyself, if you know the super self, you will begin to act virtuously. Virtuous action. Listen carefully. I discovered something, some problem with the devotees. I found fault. Are you careful to hear this fault? Very, very important. Usually, we think the mode of goodness means I am a regulated person, I am vegetarian, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I'm a, you know, pretty much clean person. I'm in the mode of goodness, Prabhu. This is just the beginning. You know what's mode of goodness? Ultimately, to do good to others. How many of us are thinking of others? It's mostly, how can I please myself today? This is the desert of selfishness. And doing good to others, it can be material good and spiritual good. But when you dedicate it to Krishna, it all becomes spiritual. Looking after others, physical comfort, looking after others, emotional stability, looking after others, social stability, intellectual progress and spiritual progress is actually goodness. And when it's dedicated to Krishna, it becomes pure goodness, sudha-sattva. Sudha-sattva is not something mystical. Sometimes devotees think, I'm going to meditate on Radha and Krishna's pastimes and I am in sudha-sattva. Sudha-sattva means to see that every person is a child of Radha and Krishna, lost, suffering in this world. And it's my duty to reconnect them with the Mother, Father. This is sudha-sattva. It's very simple. You're just thinking how to help others. No more selfish. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay, so this is really goodness. And this is pure goodness when it is an activity to benefit others spiritually, is sudha-sattva. Not just how I am in goodness myself. Hey Prabhu, I am in goodness. I am so regulated. I never touch anything except prasadam, Prabhu. I don't smoke and I don't drink. And I'm a good person. I never fight with anyone. But I also don't do any good to anyone. So, relationship is all about understanding that I am the servant of the other person. Think like that. When I was in Bulgaria, in the bus, traveling, a few weeks ago, behind me there was a couple, boy and a girl, students. They started to fight in the bus. Not very loud, but you could hear them. You know, I was just one seat. So something was going on there, you know, some very heavy energy. So I just got up from my seat and I went with the big smile and I told them, why are you fighting? You know. So they looked at me like that. They couldn't believe someone will interfere actually in their own life. Someone is getting into their own space. Who do you think you are? But I was like so peaceful, you know, and so much concern about them that they, wow, yeah, what do you have to tell us? So I told them, you know, why do you fight? Why don't you just love one another? I asked them like that. They said, but we are trying to iron some problems. Okay, ironing problems. So I said, how can you iron a shirt, squashed shirt, if someone is pulling the shirt from this side and the other one from that side? How can you iron a shirt like that? Have you ever seen people ironing shirts like this? Huh? One squashed shirt and then Ananta is pulling his side and I'm pulling my side and we're trying to iron it. Will it happen? Huh? Never. So there is a style, there is a way to iron a shirt. You put it on the ironing board, you get the iron and you... So there is a science for everything. So I told them that you are fighting because every one of you is thinking you are the boss of the other person. They started to think. How do I know? Because you are demanding the other person to behave the way you want them to behave. Listen very carefully. You are demanding, you should behave like this. I want you to behave like that. Otherwise you are my enemy. And the other one is saying, no, you behave like this. I want you to behave like that. So both of them are trying to control one another and naturally it's going to come into a fight. So I told them, instead of trying to control one another, try to accept one another. That this is this person, he or she has this issue, that issue, but I am not their master, I am not their controller. I can communicate with them what I think about their behavior, but I should not to try to dominate and try to force them into a behavior. Because in that way I'm robbing them from their free will. You understand? You take away the free will. And even Krishna doesn't take your free will. Who you are to take his free will? Do you understand? Krishna has given you the free will. You want material world? Here you go. You want the spiritual? Here we go. So we have to let people be themselves. We may tell them, this what you do is unhealthy, is not going to be good for you, but we cannot force them, we cannot control them. And we, if the person is struggling, we have to tolerate. If we really love them, we have to tolerate the weakness and we have to keep encouraging them to get out of that weakness. Prabhupada did that with his students. Many times, some of them had smoking problems, someone had this problem, that Prabhupada tolerated, kept tolerating, until they came to the level of purity, high level of consciousness. So, and of course, when they understood the philosophy, they were empowered to come to a higher level of consciousness. But Prabhupada never controlled and forced people. And that's why he was successful, because he was never controlling. He was inspiring, he was encouraging people. When they had a deep relationship with someone, he may chastise him, But it was based on a very deep affection for each other. It wasn't external. So, few more points, very important points. So if we begin to gain this knowledge that I am the soul, I am the servant of the super soul, we will gain the knowledge also how we are the servant of everyone else. And then we're going to become virtuous, we're going to become good people, we're going to start doing good acts of goodness towards others. Act of goodness is something that will benefit the other person, that will help the other person, that will benefit the other person. And by doing this, you will get permanent happiness. Because you're always doing that, you will always be permanently happy. And you're not attached. This is very, very important. Here it says the worker, fruitive worker, is attached to the result. But you're not attached. You're doing good, but you're not attached to what you're going to get from it for yourself. Any material benefits, you're not interested into that. Even you're not interested in gaining happiness. You're just doing it because you know that this is your position to serve others, to benefit others. And when you're not attached neither for material benefits, neither for even happiness itself, then you'll become happy. Permanently happy. Anandam Buddhivardhanam. Ever fresh, ever expanding happiness. This is a notion that nobody speaks about, but it's within the yoga texts. Ever fresh, ever expanding happiness. Wow! This is when you know who you are. I'm not the body, I'm the soul. When you know your relationship with the super soul, I'm a servant of the super soul because I'm part of the macrocosm. The part is meant to serve the whole, the root cause. So when I am in touch with the root cause inside my heart, and I'm serving this root cause, then I know how to serve others. And in that service, virtuous, good, beneficial activities to others, I gain happiness without being demanding, without desiring, without being motivated to look for happiness. We just do good, beneficial activities to others for their own benefit. And then from that, mysteriously, we receive happiness that we never experienced before. Never. It's a transcendental happiness. It's a yoga happiness. Yoga means relationship. It's different. It is not based on selfishness. It's based on love. Love means to care about others, to serve others, to contribute to the happiness of others. This is relationship. And when two personalities have knowledge and they see each other in that light, that I am actually meant to take care of the other person. If it's mutual, then the relationship can be sustained. And then people have to also, for creating a family, for example, you need to have like a understanding whether it's the right person you want to engage with in terms of their objectives, their aims. So there has to be some study of the character of the person before you want to engage. So even home and family, there's nothing wrong with it when it is in the proper context. Home and family is nothing wrong with it if it's in the proper context. If it's in the context of service to the Supreme Person. Sannyas means to put everything into perspective. If you take God out of the picture, then family becomes almost like a dark well of suffering. It's just no relationship, everyone is suffering, pulling the shirt his way. That's why it's so much fighting. One lady told me yesterday, her mother and father, they live so many years, 30 years together. They have separate rooms, they hardly talk to each other. They hardly have anything to do with one another. They're just in the same house, everyone has his own life. Why? Because they don't know that they're actually meant to be serving the other person. They became so distant because everyone was expecting the other one to serve them. And then when two people want the other person to serve, when they get displeased, then they separate. And they stayed there together out of convenience, in the same roof, out of convenience. There is no affection, no relationship. So this science has to be learned. How to put everything into its place, sannyas. How to renounce the ego, how to renounce the false ego, the false identity, I am the master, I am the enjoyer. That's where the problem is. The desert of selfishness. If we get out of this desert of selfishness, if we serve the Supreme Being, if we serve others in that context, of course we have to nurture ourselves as well. But if we come to that point of service to the Supreme Being, then we will know how to serve every person. Because everyone is part and parcel of the Supreme. If you pour water on the root of a tree, then the whole tree becomes happy. Yeah? If you pour water on the leaves, it's very difficult. So, this is the secret of life. It's the secret of relationship, the secret of detachment, the secret of Sudha-Sattva, to pour water on the root, which is to try to please the Supreme Being. First, you, me. And then when we do that internally, we are focused on that, then we know how to deal with each and every person for their benefit. And when we do that, then we get happiness. Just see. Then we are completely satisfied and happy. We got so much happiness, we don't know what to do with it. We start giving it to others, you know. Hey, Ananta, that's a good deal, huh? Just for 1 million euro. Okay, so, in conclusion, it's very important to have proper knowledge. The proper knowledge leads to virtuous activities, and the virtuous activities lead to happiness. I'll make you one contrast. Pleasure. The difference between pleasure and happiness. Have you ever thought about it? There is a difference between pleasure and happiness. You want to know? Okay. Pleasure is when we try to do something to please ourselves, but it's not beneficial to us, it's not beneficial to others. That is called pleasure. But happiness is something different. Happiness is beneficial to us. When we engage in activities that are serving others, we get happiness. And happiness is beneficial to us. It encourages us to do more activities like that and benefits others. While pleasure is something that is just self-centered and ultimately displeasing others, and also dissatisfying ourselves or disserving to ourselves. Just one example, if we say someone wants to drink alcohol, he feels pleasure from it. But if you drink alcohol, you're not benefiting yourself in any way, and you're not benefiting society. I never heard someone benefiting society because he drank alcohol. So that's searching for pleasure. And searching for happiness is the real way, knowledge, virtue, happiness. While searching for pleasure means no knowledge, no virtuous act, pleasure. And that pleasure is temporary. You get something, a little bit, and then you get misery after that. Just think about that. We can benefit the whole world in this way. So this is essentially the message of Bhagavad Gita. This is a love book, like I said, because he teaches the love between two friends, Krishna and Arjuna. Krishna was sharing with Arjuna his knowledge about his awareness about everything. Of course, Krishna is not an ordinary person, he was the Supreme Person. But he was giving Arjuna wisdom and a vision about reality that is not an ordinary vision. And therefore, that is his love for Arjuna. So it's a love book, it's a leadership book, and it's a science book as well. Leadership book because Arjuna was a leader, he was a king, and Krishna was teaching him how to be a perfect king. And also it's a science book because this book teaches about everything in the material world and in the spiritual world, how it works. So it's a science book. I was telling you about this book, the five languages of love, okay? So if you look at them, it's always about service to the other person, the five languages. You have to find the language which your partner responds to, you know, like service and, you know, like whatever, there are five different levels. So some people will not respond to one kind of language, but they will respond to another. So, but ultimately it's always about caring for others, and when they feel that we care, then there is this mutual appreciation. If the care comes from both sides, and that's where we are connected to good matching between people. Initially, there must be good matching, in a sense that there is a similar nature between two people. In our modern language, they use the word soulmates. It's like similar nature. They understand one another. They don't try to exploit one another. They don't try to cheat. They really want to have a sustainable relationship. And they try to see how to contribute to the happiness of the other person in the relationship. So I know in our society it's very difficult because there's financial considerations. You know, there is social consideration, social stability, economic stability, how a couple can fit into one environment like that. But if the foundation is strong, spiritual foundation is strong, social and economic stability will all fall into place. I guarantee you that. If the foundation of knowledge, I am the soul, I am eternal, my function is to serve the super soul. And by serving the super soul, I can serve everyone, because everyone is an energy of the super soul. You see, when we think in that mood of being a servant, being a caretaker, being a well-wisher to others, with detachment, without demanding anything, then we come to goodness and super goodness. And then we're happy. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Any comments or questions, realizations? Did it resonate with you, what we said? Did it make sense? Okay. We are very happy about it. We are serving you and you are feeling benefited, and immediately we feel happy. There is a perfect example of what I was teaching. You are happy and I am happy also. You cannot be happy when others are suffering. You should watch yourself. Am I making others suffering, and I'm enjoying their suffering? That means you're in a completely wrong consciousness. Yes? Anything anyone would like to share? Prabhu, thanks for the sweets. Can you see these great souls there? When you gave me the sweets, I shared it with them. He made the sweets actually. And I shared with them, and I invited them, and you see they came. Because of your sweets. Yes. They were so good, they felt we're going to get some more later, let's go inside. You better bring some now, okay? Just joking. Yeah, anything? Yes, please, share anything you want.
For me, it was like when we met,
yes,
when we were talking about those things,
yes,
your announcement, yeah, for me, you confirmed that I'm on the right path.
Yes, very good. This is what we want. Thank you so much. Yeah. Some people, they have the knowledge, but they just need someone to reaffirm, yes, you're in the right path, in the right direction. So keep going.